Hey everyone, so I sat down recently with my friend Lauren, and we discussed issues of gender stereotypes, and particularly affecting her students who are adolescents. So join us for this podcast.
Hey everyone, this is Zoe Mazuchka, and today I am sitting with my good friend Lauren, and we are going to talk about gender stereotypes, and how they can be extremely harmful to adolescents, especially those adolescents experiencing ACEs. So Lauren is a teacher at a Title I high school in the United States. She also has a degree in sociology and has done lots of studies on gender or research on gender. And so, Lauren, you're kind of in the front lines, on the front lines of how gender stereotypes might affect adolescents. So, I kind of wanted to start with a question for you. And so, I wanted to start with the World Health Organization and their definition of gender. They define it as the socially constructed characteristics of women and men, such as norms, roles, and relationships of and between groups of women and men. And then the European Institute for Gender Equality defines gender stereotypes as preconceived ideas whereby females and males are arbitrarily assigned characteristics and roles determined and limited by their gender. I just kind of want to get your reaction to those definitions because I have some feelings on them, but I'm wondering what your feelings are on those definitions.
Well, I think that they are limiting
Yeah, I agree.
in every possible way to children of, today. Gender is, of course, something that we are currently unpacking. It's always taking up the news. It's something that's very contentious. There are a lot of people who are actively, vocally, very much so in support of, but also against it. But I think it just comes down to literally a person-to-person interaction.
I mean, something I find like totally limiting about this definition is that it literally just says women and men in both definitions. And how can we have a discussion about gender when we're only talking about socially constructed characteristics of women and men?
I just see these definitions as a jumping off point. Language is forever evolving. Society is always changing. So it only makes sense that, the way that we think about things, the way that we label things will evolve along with us. So I definitely just view gender as a cloud. You and I have had discussions about this before. I think getting someone to at least move from a binary male-female perspective to a spectrum is a great step, but the goal is to eventually release the idea of gender being tied to any kind of expectation. The hope
Absolutely.
is for gender to just be, okay, yeah, this is what I am, whatever it may be. And a lot of people want to, hopefully move into a time where we're quote unquote post-gender, where it does not matter. And the immediate reaction is usually from the scientific community or people who lean deeply into the scientific community, who say, well, then what about medicine? How are we going to handle stuff? It's biologically assigned. Da, 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 da. But the whole point is that we are loosening up the binds. It's not that we are trying to destroy gender. No one is trying to say you can't be a man anymore or you can't be a woman anymore. We are just trying to make space for everyone at the table. And furthermore, as a history teacher, I have to say this: non-binary is older than anything, any other structure that we have, any other expectation that we have. People have been living outside of man for millennia.
Now, do you see, I mean, that's a great point. And like, as a history teacher, do you see these gender stereotypes and these constructs playing out in your classrooms and for your students?
Definitely, definitely. I think that it depends on very much so where a student comes from, the family that they have, the education that they have, the experiences that they've been a part of. But they're still young people. I teach from 15 to 17. So the majority of them are still very much so underneath their parents' guidance for their belief and their value system. Mm-hmm. So some people are, you know, very much so conservative. I have not seen any outright, there has not been any recorded outright physical violence or hate crimes committed at my school. I want to say the last one was like 2003, and it was an anti-Semitic, situation. Okay. We have a lot of gender non-conforming students. And so the default is to just be cool with people that you are cool with, who are cool with you, I should say. So it's just a matter of being a Title I school. I have a lot of students who are from lower economic, like socioeconomic standing. Mm-hmm. They come from lower income houses. So the priority is not on gender theory or how we're thinking about gender or sexual orientation. That it's not a, like, their lives don't revolve around that. That's a completely separate realm from what a lot of my students are going through. So what they know is, if you show me respect, I respect you. If you're cool with me, I'm cool with you. And that's really just what it is across, you know, a variety of social circles I've seen.
Well, that's great. I mean, maybe this concept of harmful gender stereotypes, and I mean, when I say harmful gender stereotypes, I mean, you can see these kind of stereotypes leaking in and affecting people's mental health, but also physical health as well, when we talk about violence related to gender. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like you're not really seeing a lot of that play out in your school. And with your student population. So I'm wondering if you think maybe this is something that doesn't have to be a public health issue, and maybe it will solve itself over time with the newer generations that are more open, or...
I don't think that these things will just disappear over time. I think they are 1000% a public health issue, number one, because the only reason that we have achieved all of this progress with acceptance or achieved all of this loosening of the binds or expectations of gender is because of the activists who have come before us, who have come before the students who I'm working with now, to normalize this, to not make it something that's immediately offensive or something that causes a reaction. A negative reaction in people. People have put in the work to do this.
Right.
And number two, it has to be a public health issue, because the majority of medical standards, the amount of data that has been collected surrounding diseases and how diseases manifest in people, have mostly been studies with men. There needs to be an inclusion of what it's like to have these diseases manifest in someone who is intersex, in someone, you know, who was born with a vagina, someone who is, you know, there has to be more inclusion in every single regard so we can have a better idea of how bodies work. We can't just have defaults.
Right, right. And do you think that in regards to your students that do identify and or present as genderqueer, gender fluid, do you feel that they need to rely on methods of resiliency to protect themselves? So for example, do they generally, you know, get together with other friends that are allies and or also like genderqueer? Or do you think that there are other resiliency methods that they have that they use? And do you think those students who, I guess a part two to that question would be, do you think that those students who are genderqueer, do you think that adds and or compounds their adverse childhood experiences or their ACEs that they might have experienced?
Oh, 1000%. It definitely compounds it. Because as soon as someone is deviant in any regards to their sexuality or their gender, they become a target. Mm. They become someone who is at risk of losing their family ties, their support, their safety. There have been countless youth who have been kicked out of their homes, and the homeless on the streets turning to sex work. It becomes a mess. And all of this stuff is compounded. All of these identities, all of these issues become just, they just intersect into a potentially traumatizing experience. And right. I feel like what I've seen with my students is that they find community with each other. Mm-hmm. Many of my queer students sit together, they work together. They keep track of each other and they hold each other accountable. Mm-hmm. I remember I came into school, I identify as queer. And right. I came into school, during the last week of school, we were allowed to do, a wear your flag day. And I brought a pride flag. I have a little pride flag shirt. And mm-hmm. all of my, they crowded around my desk and they have been, they absorbed me into their little right. community. They thought that I could be a part of their community. And I was like, okay, well, I'm your teacher. I can't be your best friend, I'm very honored, yeah. But they seek out that community because they know that there is safety in that community.
Of course. Right. No, I think that's, and how do you feel that adults and teachers and community members can help foster that community, but also educate others to, if not accept, at least respect, especially adolescents, who mm-hmm. are everyone who is genderqueer or a minority in any sort of sexual identity or orientation, but also especially adolescents who are, their brains are still developing. They're at a very tumultuous age for mental health disorders and other aspects like that.
I tell kids and adults the same thing. I tell them to listen. Anyone who is a minority in some regard, whether it's a gender minority, whether you are a woman, whether you are a Black woman, whether you are cis, you are a genderqueer person. If you are a minority in any regard, you have a story to tell. You have experiences that validate why you are fighting for yourself.
I think listening is definitely, as a public health student, we talk a lot about education and going in and educating people and this kind of intervention method. But I think that's a great point, something that we could all use a little bit more as our active listening skills, not to sound like a cliche here.
No, but it's true. There's a reason that people say that all the time, because we need to listen right. more. Just in general, right. we need to stop yeah. running our mouths and we need to listen to people who have not had space to speak.
Exactly. Making that space for people, I think, exactly. is so powerful for that
Pass the mic.
All right. We got our hashtag for this.
Hashtag pass the mic. That's the name of the podcast.
Boop. Hashtag pass the mic. All right. Well, those are all my questions for you today, my friend. Is there anything else you'd kind of like to end with or discuss that I didn't bring up about, gender, sexuality, just, adolescents, your students, whatever it is? That you think definitely need to know.
Immigration status affects everything. Immigration status affects everything. Mm-hmm. When kids' parents are taken away, when that stuff happens, when parents are taken away from their kids, that is a unique trauma. That is right. a very unique trauma. And trauma is taught, essentially, to be manifested in different ways according to how you are, according to what gender you're assigned. Mm-hmm. If you are born and someone you are labeled, boy, you're slapped with the boy sticker, you are not allowed to cry. You are not allowed to show emotion. You're allowed to be upset, but your upset better be translated as anger. Mm-hmm. And of course, people don't fit that way.
Right, of course.
With girls, it's okay. So if you're upset, you get to be emotional, and that's how we're going to know that you're upset. people don't fit that way. So when you have this expectation, let's say a kid comes in and their, you know, their parent has been taken away by ICE. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's they're traumatized. They're still coming into school because they have to come to school because you get penalized school. Right. You see a girl and you're going to think, okay, so if she's upset, she's going to tell me she's upset. That child may not speak. That child may not tell you what's wrong.
Right.
And then she may snap at you another way, but because you expect her to be upset about something in a very certain way, because you expect her to upset in a very certain way, you're going to make a mistake. You're going to misread her emotions and you are going to punish her.
So what I'm hearing is we need to listen and kind of look at ourselves as well and understand our own gender stereotypes that we have within ourselves, especially as educators and as adults working with adolescents, because we could gender them in a way with these stereotypes that we're not helping them in the best way we can, or we could even be hurting them in a way in regards to their trauma that they're experiencing already.
Yes, but I'm also talking about the ways that class status or status of citizenship, status of race, status of how things intersect to possibly make it even more complicated. So that's I'm saying to look at the way you expect people to behave critically. Look at the way that you examine your behavioral expectations for people critically, with a critical eye, because you can end up hurting someone because you hold on to these biases.
Hey again, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to the conversation Lauren and I had about gender and gender stereotyping. Feel free to continue the conversation with your family, friends, loved ones, because the more we talk about gender and gender stereotyping, and the more we listen to people about their experiences, the better things will be for everyone. Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.